Like, yes. I have a kid now, but we also have almost 300 episodes of this podcast, and literally, I don't even know how many hours of audio of like you and me and Scott talking about life and games.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a gigantic 7 year plus chunk of my life with like my life and my experiences all recorded. Like, in the future, it's going to be very possible for him to like take these things as like big chunks of my memories and just have access to them, you know?
Yeah.
And who's to say that it can't be uploaded into like some sort of weird dad robot in the future?
Future dad robot.
Yeah.
So back to the show. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 298, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Ash.
And we have Scottless chats today.
Scottless chats. Doesn't quite roll off the tongue like the other one.
Not quite as well, but it's close.
Yeah.
And it's not bad.
Where is Scott today?
He got whisked away by what are those half hawk, half lion things that Griffin?
He got whisked away
by a griffin.
Ah, poor Scott.
From Seattle to the Great North.
It's like the Golden Eagle video with a goat just throwing Scott off the cliff.
You want to get into that video clip?
I love. Let's talk about that meme for a second, and then we'll do the quick rundown. So yeah. We'll do the meme first, then we'll do the rundown. Okay.
So a meme came out this week.
I love this meme, by the way.
That had 9 things in it, and it said pick 2 and the other to defend you, and the other 7 are coming to kill you. And it was 10,000 rats, 50 eagles, 3 gorillas, 5 bears, 7 Cape Town buffalo, I think is what they're called. 1 hunter. Can I do this all from recall? 1 hunter.
Pretty remarkable.
15 wolves and 10 crocodiles or alligators.
Wow.
I think that's all of them. I just did them all by recall.
I think that's amazing. Yeah. And I told you that the rats would win all the time because there's like 10,000 of them.
Well, here's the rule here. Here's what we have worked it down to at my work. We talked about this for literal days. So we really worked this one out. Our final decision as a group was 10,000 rats and 50 eagles. And here's why. The rats, you just want off the board. You don't want to die by 10,000 rats. That's the worst possible death out of all of
like
these things.
It's like getting pinched to death by millions and millions of little claws and, well, not millions, but 10,000 mouths.
Yes. So like, you know, like if a crocodile or a gator comes to kill you, it's going to snap your neck and drown you and you're dead. There's nothing else to do. Gorilla is just going to break you in half in a second.
Yeah.
You know, a bear wouldn't be fun, but it's better than even 1,000 rats eating you to death, which is a horrible, horrible death.
Yeah.
And then the eagles is a tactical thing. Like, they're the only flying one in the entire thing, and they're vicious. Like, they'll take out eyes. They'll pick up the smaller animals and drop them. Like, they're going to not screw around, you know? So
yeah. Eagles are no joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we looked up a video of an eagle attacking a bear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it went straight for the bear's eyes, and the bear had zero response to this eagle attacking it, and it just kind of like fell over and then tried to run away.
Just a blind bear from here on out.
Yeah.
Went home and told his cubs, this eagle took my eyes.
So anyways, rats and eagles, and any other guests.
Let's do the rundown.
So on this week's show, we're actually going to be talking about the some news. So we're going to talk about Overwatch League a little bit and the first female player in Overwatch League. New Disney On Demand, or the new Disney, I guess, Netflix-style channel that is coming into existence soon. Viacom announcing a brand new streaming channel of their own. And we'll talk about trailers for Han Solo, Deadpool, Jessica Jones, Infinity War, Venom. And then we're going to review Altered Carbon. I only saw the pilot, but you saw the whole thing. So I'm really eager to know your thoughts. I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter World. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we'll talk a little bit about a mobile game, Hero Academy 2.
Yeah.
So
And then
let's
we had a question this week too.
Oh yeah, we did. I almost forgot. We had a question of the week, and I just kind of thought of a silly one. Can you describe your favorite game with a single word? Let us know. And we had some fun responses, so we'll read those on the air too and see if we can
Oh
figure
boy,
out. You know,
you're not going to guess.
I only gotten like a quarter of these so far, so we'll see.
News.
So Overwatch news. This is actually really exciting because on the last full episode we did, so I want to say what 296, we were talking about, or I was talking about specifically how there were no females in the Overwatch League, and it was kind of a bummer. There's not enough diversity, blah blah blah. And it turns out next season that's all going to change. Gajuri, who is the female Zarya player who we mentioned on the last episode, who's like one of the best Zarya players in the world, has actually been drafted by the Shanghai Dragons, and she'll be playing next season. And I just thought this was awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's a little kind of a little bit of a catch here. Currently, the Shanghai Dragons are the worst ranked team, which actually I love in this type of stuff. I love underdog stories, so I'm going to be following this very, very closely. I've actually been watching quite a bit of Overwatch League when I can. It's a good, you can watch it on Twitch, so I'll pull it up on my tablet at night, like while the kid's sleeping, and pop some headphones on and watch some matches. But very, very well produced and super fun to watch. And I'm really eager to see. There's supposed to be some new teams added next season as well. That we don't know from which areas of the world yet, but it looks like they're going to add at least three or four brand new teams to the roster. So it looks like it's still expanding.
There's no European teams yet, right?
There are a few.
Oh, there are? Okay.
Yeah, there's London Spitfire.
Oh, London, right. Yeah.
Yeah, London Spitfire, and then there's two teams out of Asia as well, but the rest
Okay.
are US teams. But the US teams really consist of players from all over the world. So
Right.
it's one of those, it's one of those things that they are basically drafting all the best pros from all over and bringing in the pro teams into the Overwatch League. But yeah, I mean, like honestly, if you play Overwatch at all and you listen to the show and you haven't been watching Overwatch League, check it out. I saw a conversation on Facebook the other day, on someone's thread, and they were saying like I could never watch esports. I don't understand it. And I kind of was trying to explain why it's interesting. And honestly, it's because they are, it's, I'm assuming, like a lot like watching pro sports, they are the best of the best of the best. Like, yes,
Right.
I can play Overwatch, but I cannot play at that level by any means. So if you want
Yeah.
to see someone who's the best of the best, then this is what you watch. It's like going to see a band, it's like
I
you
mean,
watch them because it's fantastic.
I don't love it, but I would argue this. Like, I don't love basketball either, but when I watch like LeBron James play or somebody, it is interesting to watch and fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when you watch something of that caliber, it's intriguing to watch somebody be that good at something. It's just kind of insane to think about, you know. And I think it's just people are fast enough, and I was in the past, and are fast enough to dismiss the notion of like, well, it's just video games kind of thing, like who cares? But I think that there is something to super talented people doing a skill that they have honed over however much time. And I think to me it's just still, it's a little bit, and maybe Overwatch League is getting there quicker. There's just still, I need like a little bit more hoopla, you know, or whatever, or narrative around it to really get intrigued or engrossed or really like part of it, you know. It's got to be, you got to get a little bit of that WWF just
Yeah,
showmanship out of
I'm
this
right there with
stuff.
you, man. I think that's what I said in the last episode too. I think it has since I've been watching it more since the last episode. I think it's gotten a little bit better. They're doing more interviews. They have like some segments where they'll take like the team out to dinner and they'll just kind of show, them hanging out and sort of what their training regimen's like. So it's a bit better, but
Yeah.
I agree. I think it needs to be a little bit more. Like I want to get to know them and I want to know,
Yeah.
why they're doing it and why they're devoting that much time, other than of course the money and stuff. I
Yeah.
want to know, what their story is. But anyway, this is a great story. First female player. Hopefully there's many more to come, and it will be good to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You probably heard as much as I did about this new Disney on-demand service. What are some of the things that you've heard?
So it's going to be, you know, their own, it's called OTT, which is over the top service, to match against probably, I would assume, you know, they're trying to go up against Netflix, trying to go up against Hulu, but really also pitting up against, you know, the HBOs and the Showtimes or whatnots, of the world. But from what I heard, it's going to be no R-rated movies. So it'll be very on brand for Disney, very like kid friendly. They've got a bunch of movies slated, and they're saying something like, I think they want to release like 5 to 7 movies a year or something along those lines for the first year or two. They're going to do a bunch of original content TV stuff around it too, as well as having all of the Marvel movies, all of the Star Wars movies, all that stuff will go to the Disney Channel as well. And then it said anything that's R-rated will continue to go to Hulu, I believe is what I read.
Yeah, so, I think that's like, it's honestly, I think it's pretty good news. I was curious/nervous about what was going to be happening with their Netflix content. Like, was, you know, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, all those shows, were they going to get moved over to this new Disney streaming service? And I like that they're staying on Netflix. I like that Netflix's little corner of the Marvel universe can stay dark. I think that's pretty cool.
I added the next news item, which I think there's not a lot of details on, so we can kind of just throw it in here, which is that Viacom this week also announced that they're going to launch an OTT channel this year. So Viacom owns Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, MTV, that might be it, BET, I think, and that might be it. Those might be the big four. They might have a few other, like, you know, offshoot channels or whatever, but I think those are the big four that they own.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying they're going to launch their own streaming service as well. And I think what's happening is what I assumed was going to happen eventually, which is that all of these companies are realizing that, yes, you can do deals with Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix, which are the big kind of aggregate services, but they're not great deals for you at the end of the day. And there's more long-term revenue potential by having your own OTT channel, right?
Mm-hmm.
The issue there is that now we as consumers live in kind of the wild west of digital content, where, like, who are you subscribing to? How often? Where do you even get the piece of content you're trying to watch? You know,
seriously,
what I mean? Like if some new show launches, is it on the Disney Channel? Is it on Hulu? Are they putting it on Netflix? You know,
and it's
whatever
different
it might
per
be.
Region too. Like, I was just looking into, like, I'm one of those idiots who still has not watched The Expanse.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, I know it's on demand, but I couldn't figure out where. And I was reading this article, and apparently in Canada, it's on Netflix, but in the US, it's on Amazon, I think.
Yeah.
It's just like, and there's a lot of shows that are like that, that are just spread out. And
yeah.
Then you have like the proprietary, like CW, where they have, you know, only 5 episodes of their thing on that. And then they move to Netflix after the first.
Well, then you have stuff like Comedy Central, which will put some shows up on Hulu night after, and then others, like their big shows like Daily Show and Drunk History, don't go up on, like, it's like random what goes up there and what doesn't, so you can't figure that, like, there's just stuff all over the map. And then beyond that, the costs are going to start getting insane. Like, if you were to subscribe to HBO, Netflix, Hulu, and let's say this Disney competitor, right, and I'm in a wild ballpark guess that the Disney competitor is going to be over $10 a month,
probably.
That you're at that point spending, let's say, even on the low end of each one of those packages, you're spending probably $40 a month just on that. So when you pair that with your internet service, which has probably climbed up to about $50 for most people at this point, you're back at that $100 cable bill part, you know, like, so it's really like, it's getting to that point where you're like, oh no, like, we just rebuilt a different terrible monster. So I don't know. It's exciting
to
me.
It's a really good
point.
I mean, you know, you don't want to spend a fortune, but it's great. I mean, the thing that's wonderful about it is you're having original content being produced and purchased, like Cloverfield paradox, that you necessarily wouldn't see.
Yes.
Some of them you're getting a lot of value out of, like the fact that this new Disney Channel is going to have its own Star Wars, or apparently it's going to have its own Star Wars show. It's just like, oh man, that's like a dream realized, to have, you know, new Star Wars episodes, you know, coming out all the time. Like, that's just wild. So,
which is great. And I think that's like the good part, is that we're getting way more content. And if you're like super dedicated to managing when you're paying for what, you can keep those costs down easier than you can with cable, which is part of the deal too, you know, but it's just kind of like, it's going to get centralized again. Like, it will happen within the next 5 years. You know, somebody will start aggregating all this stuff back in again and being like, oh no, here's the place you can go and get all these things for these different package prices. And
right,
we're just going to rebuild a new cable company essentially. But it's just, it's interesting to me. I don't know. There's a lot of them. I think the Disney ones definitely got more pull than the Viacom one to me, but I also don't have kids that would watch Nickelodeon. So that's one thing. And then also, I don't know, like Comedy Central only has a couple shows that I watch anymore. I haven't watched MTV in probably 10 years. Like there's just no draw there, you know? So it's maybe just not aimed at me too. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's definitely interesting to see. I think the biggest story is going to be what exactly the original program is going to be. There
are
rumors of at least one Marvel show specifically for this channel and one Star Wars show specifically for this channel. And if that happens,
I assume that the Marvel show will be more akin to like Earth's Mightiest Avengers, right? Like it's going to be, I would assume it's going to be animated.
You think?
And I feel like it, but maybe not. I mean, I don't know.
I feel
but
like
if
they
they're
might
saying,
move New Warriors and have that be,
stuff like that.
They delayed that. Or maybe Cloak and Dagger. Like there's a couple that haven't aired
yet. The stuff
yet
that they were going to put on the ABC Family Channel or whatever.
Right, that might still draw people in.
Yeah, but, that's true.
Interesting stuff. But man, last week was a good week for trailers. I was losing my mind. I guess you want to start with Han Solo?
Sure.
I'm gonna be a glass half full. I think this looks really good. Like I'm pretty stoked. Like I still think that there should not be a Han Solo movie because at this point, why? There's so many different stories to tell, and we kind of know how depressingly his story ends.
Right.
Sad and alone with your kid hating you and your wife that you don't talk to anymore. So that's a sad ending for his story. But I think visually this trailer looks great. You know, there were a lot of rumors of, they're fact at this point of big trouble with the filming of this movie, with Ron Howard taking over. And then there was also rumors of the main actor having to have acting lessons during the shoot in order to pull off some of the scenes, which whatever. But, you know, from the little bit of footage that we've seen at this point, I think visually it looks really pretty. Like, it's cool to see the Millennium Falcon looking all new.
Yeah. I think visually it looks pretty good. I don't love the dark, gritty reboot thing that they're kind of seemingly going for, but that might just be how the trailer's edited too. I understand that trailers don't necessarily always, you know, one-to-one to the movie. What I will say is that every character that is not Han Solo in this movie was exciting to see in the trailer. So, like, super excited about Emilia Clarke's character, about Donald Glover, you know, as Lando. Like, seeing all those people, seeing Woody Harrelson show up and you know, basically deliver a Han Solo line, which was kind of cool. I thought all of that was, like, done. I was like, oh, now I'm mildly more interested. I still, like, the guy playing Han Solo is, like, akin to the guy who played Iron Fist for me, where I'm just like, okay, like I'm not interested. I don't know why. It's a weird thing to say. It's just not like I'm not sold yet on him, and I'll happily eat my words or whatever if he ends up being incredible. That's great. I'm not wishing it poorly, you know. So
no, yeah, I mean I feel the same way. The shoes are just impossible to fill. Like, you have this iconic character that, like, you and I
from
literally
an iconic actor too.
Right.
Like, it's
we
like
grew
all
up
of,
watching
know?
Him like our entire lives. So it's very hard to be like, you know, very hard to have someone slide in and be like, oh, I'm the same guy. It's like, wait a second. Like, you're not the same guy. So,
which was, I think, why we both were kind of like, Han Solo? Like, do we really need a Han Solo movie? You know, like, why don't you tell a story that surrounds Han Solo and then somebody else, and then he just like walks by in the background, you know? that would be fine.
Yeah, I think to me, the most interesting thing about this is going to be the supporting cast.
Yes.
For a variety of reasons. I read a thing about the droid that I thought was just incredible. The droid apparently is a little bit more self-aware than normal droids, and she has built and upgraded herself, which I think is just really, like, they haven't really done that before. So she's sort of like a hacked together droid from a variety of parts who has kind of become a little bit more... you know, a little bit more self-aware, a little bit more kind of active in her own self-preservation and in her life as a droid, as like a real, like, living, breathing, not breathing, but living sort of entity, which I think is just a really cool concept to have this, you know, this sort of sentience to a droid character. And her name is L337, which is the
she's Lee.
Yeah, she's Lee, exactly. So I thought that was pretty interesting, but yeah, man, I'm like cautiously optimistic as per usual, right?
Yeah, I'm like, here's the thing, I'm gonna go see it. I'm not gonna like nerd hate it, because I'm gonna end up going to watch it anyways. It doesn't really matter, but it just was one of those like, okay, like it made it more interesting than it was pre-trailer. They did a good job with the trailer to at least make me go like, okay, there's more to this movie than just watching somebody who's not Harrison Ford run around and try to pretend to be Harrison Ford, which is like a thing I don't care to see. You know, it's just not,
no, I totally,
I'm not interested.
Yeah, that totally so, makes sense. Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, this next one, Deadpool 2 trailer, heavily featuring Cable in this one.
Yeah, it was more of a Cable trailer than it was a Deadpool trailer, huh?
Yeah. How do you feel about Brolin? I think I was like, I'm in now.
No, like, I said the same thing. Like, he's like the best Cable I could ever possibly imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a feeling he's going to play it totally straight.
Yes.
And he's just going to be a super badass. I thought the trailer was great. I was like, halfway through it, I was starting to get agitated. I was like, I want to see some real fucking footage already. Like,
yeah.
And then it switches over and becomes real footage, but it starts with this sort of like comedic,
yes,
action figure, Toy Story-esque.
Very, very Deadpool-ish. I liked it. Like, very same humor from the first movie, which I thought was great. I thought the, you know, wait, we didn't even have the effects ready moment was great. Like, He did a good job. Ryan Reynolds is doing a good job of selling Deadpool still, you know, as the same sense of humor. Tons of characters in this one that they kind of just snuck in and haven't really announced yet or said anything about. And everybody's guessing at who they all are right now.
Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks insane. Like, they showed a shot of sort of a helicarrier, and it looks like it might be like old, like 90s.
Like Leafield.
Yeah, Leafield. Characters like Shatterstar, maybe GW Bridge, like so, and we might be getting, you know, this nice precursor to X-Force in this movie, which is just going to be insane.
Cool.
Very insane. I mean, yeah. I'm excited, man. The first one was a big surprise for me. Like, I went in, I've always liked Deadpool, but he's just always the breaking the fourth wall thing for me as a kid in the 90s. I was like, oh, this character's ridiculous. I was like, I was into my like serious Chris Claremont.
I always liked him when he was facing off with Wolverine, but I never sought him out on his own, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like, I
absolutely
liked him as Wolverine's foil. Like, that was good and fun for me, but otherwise I was like, eh.
Yes, I feel the same way pretty much about him, but yeah, man, this looks really good. I'm eager to see, you know, I guess someone saw an early screening of it and kind of likened it to Aliens. And I was like, okay, that's the best comparison you could possibly make. So sort of this, you know,
just
kind of
up the action. Kind
of
thing.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Deadpool 2 is looking good.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think anytime a movie that can nail the first beat as well as Deadpool, like if you can do an origin story and not make it boring, then I feel like, you know, all bets are off for the second movie, if especially if you keep the same creative team, which they did.
Right.
It kind of gives you that freedom of like, okay, well, we've already done all this setup. Now it's just going to be fun. And, you know, that's cool that you heard it's action packed. That's reassuring. So,
yeah, very much so. It's going to be awesome. I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, me too. I think it looks good.
Jessica Jones, did you check out this trailer?
I watched all these, man. I was trailer happy this week.
I was. It was a great week for trailers. But yeah, I'm very excited about a couple things in this trailer. One, she's a fantastic character. We've been talking about this since this show was announced many, many years ago. I've been like, they're making a Jessica Jones show. I love the character. So having her be, you know, and Kristen Ritter does such a great job with the character, but I feel like this is great. It's kind of an exploration of her origin, which we didn't really get in the first season. So they're kind of going back and doing what they did in Luke Cage season one, which is kind of exploring where she got her powers and a little bit of her tragic history, which I think is super cool. And we're also getting some Patty Walker becoming a superhero. Hellcat stuff looks like
Hellcat
might be happening this season too, which is really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a trailer that I like. And, you know, granted, I think trailer for TV shows are different than trailers for movies, because there's too much that there's almost no way they can give away a season of TV in a minute trailer, you know?
Right.
But I liked it because it didn't feel like it overloaded anything. It was just kind of like, hey, here's the sort of theme and premise for this show for this coming season, and here you go. You know, like, without giving away too many of the comedic moments or giving away too many of the, like, surprise things. It didn't feel like they gave away much at all, other than just being like, hey, we're coming back kind of thing. So
right,
I really dug it. I thought there I won't ruin it if you didn't watch the trailer and don't want to know anything. There's a nice sort of teaser at the end of the trailer for something that seems like it will happen. And then yeah, all the Hellcat stuff was great. Like, I thought the whole thing, the attitude was still there. Everything felt very Jessica Jones, and I'm excited to see where season two goes.
Me too, man. Me too. And I'm curious. I think there are going to be some other characters from, like, the, yeah, you know, the Defenders Netflix universe in here. I don't remember who, but I think there might be some Danny Rand.
I hope it's all Iron Fist.
It's all. I know he's your favorite. I think there is going to be somebody from some one of those shows in there.
I mean, I don't mind Jessica Jones and Danny in Iron Fist's, like, play off of each other, like, because I think she's such an asshole to him that it ends up being funny, but he's just a boring character. I just don't care about him. So
I hear you, man. I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah.
This is a sort of a short one, but we did get a new teaser for Infinity War.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much, because there are some guesses of, you know, things that are going on. And I guess we can kind of talk about, if you haven't seen this teaser, I don't want to, some people want to go in, like, super fresh
super
to this.
Fresh, yeah. What I will say is this: Thanos looks better in this one. It appears that they've continued to work kind of on him and his look.
Yes.
Which is cool. It still looks very jam-packed full of characters and moments. And I'm still pretty convinced that I don't think the Avengers are going to come out of this one okay. Like, I think this is going to be an MCU world changing movie, like, way more so than anything else they've done so far.
I think so too. I'm curious. I mean, you know, we do know at this point, I guess we could add Ant-Man and the Wasp to this list too, because that came out, I think, after we recorded last. But Ant-Man and the Wasp, in terms of order, I was always curious, like, because it's actually the film is coming out after Infinity War, but on the timeline, they've revealed that it takes place right after Civil War. So they're kind of they're going to show you Infinity War first, and then you're going to jump back to the end of Civil War for Ant-Man and the Wasp. So, you know, we don't really know how Ant-Man and the Wasp are going to factor into Infinity War, if at all. Apparently they're in part two, but there's so many questions. Like, are the original Avengers just going to get wiped out and we're going to have a whole new team as of Infinity War part two? That might be the case, but yeah, the stuff we've seen looks incredible. All the stuff with Wakanda and all the stuff with, you know, the Black Order, I believe they're called.
I have a feeling that, you know, with what seems like the impending success of Black Panther, that we will see him probably take over the universe a little bit more. Like, he may end up filling the Captain America role, you know, not as Captain America, but like that leadership role. Soon enough, because that movie looks like it's going to be a giant success. So
I sure hope so, man. It looks awesome. I got my tickets already, so I'm pretty
I haven't. Amped. We looked, and like all the good ones were already gone. So I'm trying to figure out where we're going to see it. But
I suckered my wife into having that be part of our Valentine's Day experience together. So we're gonna lovingly hold hands and watch Black Panther.
So we saved the best trailer for last, right?
Man. It's funny because I listened to the Marvel Movie News podcast, and one of the hosts of that show is like really, really excited about Venom. And I keep hearing this and finally I saw this trailer and I'm like, this looks as horrible as I thought it was going to look.
Yeah, it looks really bad.
Like, I hate to be negative, you know, because there's enough.
And I like Tom Hardy a lot. Like, I actually really enjoy him as an actor and thought he could be a really cool Venom, and then I saw kind of this, what seemingly is the direction they're taking it, and it's just kind of like, oh, that's a bummer. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it went back to them saying like, oh, we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna play it more real and like make a real take on the character Venom. And there's the whole fact that, you know, that Peter Parker is likely not going to be in this, and it's like,
well, now there's rumors that he is, but he won't be Spider-Man. Because they can't do that. So he's just going to show up like as Peter Parker, and they're going to be like, "Hey, Peter," and then he's going to like walk off set, you know, like.
Okay. That's a thing.
So, yeah. I mean, because really what they're trying to do is build a Sinister Six world, right? I mean, that's where they're headed here. Is Vulture still alive? So they've got him, guess? And then they want Venom. And then, yeah, that's what I've heard, is that they want to build towards a Sinister Six. So
interesting. Interesting. I mean, you know, the thing, I guess the most important thing to touch on is the fact that this whole entire trailer, we don't ever see Venom in costume at all.
Yeah.
And there was actually someone, it was hilarious, someone on the internet's like, hey, we just want you to put this trailer at the end, put just a title for whatever other movie you want. And people were just being like, you know, Running Man 2 and like all this just like ridiculous crap at the end of the trailer, because it literally could be anything, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think part of the, I think I'd heard, and I don't know if this is guaranteed yet or not, but I had heard that Venom is going to be the more Remender-ish, like mercenary Venom, who has the symbiote, but he's not the Eddie Brock, like, you know, crazy mutate-y Venom right. character from the 90s. He's going to be the more buttoned down mercenary character from the 2000s, which is fine. And it's a cool direction, but I mean, it's a cool arc of the book, but it also is like not going to be impressive probably in a movie or impressive
right.
looking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I remember when I didn't even know this movie was actually still happening. I thought once Spider-Man went back to the MCU that they had basically canned all of the offshoot Spider-Man movies that they had talked about.
Right.
And I kept seeing like stuff pop up online, and I thought it was like fan made because it didn't look good.
Yeah. I mean,
and I was like, why are people cutting fan made trailers together for Venom? And then the real one came out, and I was like, oh, those were actual clips that they were releasing. And I was like, oh boy, this isn't good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it kind of begs the question at this point, like, you know, with the Fox deal happening, like, why don't you just cut your losses and cancel a lot of the movies that were at least in pre-production? I know they did actually just cancel the Gambit movie.
Did it officially cancel? Cause that thing has been dragging on forever. Like yeah, a very, no,
absolutely.
Very
Yeah, I think that is finally done, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, at this point, you got to say like, okay, well, you know, let's just be done with this. So I think, you know, I think that is happening. I think a lot of those are at least getting shuffled around. But you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah,
what ends up happening? I mean, I hope they're all good, man.
New Mutants is still happening, right? Because that's this year.
That is, but it's getting a rework, from what I hear. So they're redoing some of that movie, and they moved it from a hard R to a PG-13 as well.
Oh, that's a bummer. I actually was pretty excited about it being a horror film. Like, I was like, having gone back and read the original run of the New Mutants, I was like, no, that makes sense. Like, it's a bunch of terrified kids like dealing with this insanity that's going on around them, and like the notion, like people die and stuff in like the first three books. Like it's a crazy storyline that that New Mutants came out of. And I was kind of like on board, and yeah, I don't, that's a little bit of a bummer, but that, all right, well, we'll just wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
The old wait and see. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens with all this stuff, but I hope it ends up being good. I would love to see, you know, we've said this before, but I would love to see everything slowly integrated into, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as messy as that could be. It's like, please just, you know, give us the X-Men versus the Avengers in 10 years so I can die a happy man.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Why not? Like, to me, it's, I never wish any of this stuff poorly, you know, like I don't want Venom to be bad. I liked Venom when I was a kid, but like now I'm like, okay, well, guess we're gonna get it.
Yeah. Like,
so
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah.
I got Movie Pass, so maybe that'll be a Movie Pass movie.
You have to tell me how that works out for you.
It wasn't great at the start, but I haven't used it yet, so we'll see how it goes.
Cool.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk about the new Netflix sci-fi Extravaganza Altered Carbon, which is a new series based off of a book by Richard K. Morgan of the same name, Altered Carbon. And it follows this sort of, we're in the semi-distant future, and we have gotten the ability to basically download ourselves into these sort of like chip-like things that get implanted into our spines. And because
stacks,
of that,
which is such stacks, a cool name. Yeah. Put your
stack
stacks. In.
And then because of that, you can basically put your mind into any body, which the bodies are called sleeves. So you can re-sleeve yourself into any other person that, you know, any other sleeve that you can buy essentially. But it's become this sort of dystopian, you know, class-based system where there's super mega rich corporations and people. And then there's also, this like oversight power, government-ish group, I guess you would call it, with like a crazy military, and then, yeah, it's just kind of, it's sort of classic dystopian sci-fi. There's nothing really shocking in there about the world that it's set in. But it is on Netflix, starring a whole giant cast that I'm not going to run through.
Main guy is Joel Kinnaman from The yes. Killing and from Suicide Squad. He's really yes. good. He's really good. I like him. Yeah.
And then I think the biggest point of interest here, and also something very cool that I'm sure we're going to talk about, is that the costuming and dress was all done by our friend.
Yeah, Anne Foley.
Anne Foley from S.H.I.E.L.D., from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we've had her on the podcast, and it's really awesome to see her do this because this show is effing gorgeous.
Yeah,
it is really a beautiful, is. Beautiful take on sci-fi. And the costumes and the military suits and all that are honestly some of the best I've probably ever seen in TV. In TV, definitely, and possibly some of the better ones I've seen in movies even. These are... The show, there's no one knows because Netflix does not tell you these kind of things, but it is rumored that this show is the most expensive season one of a show ever created. So
I can definitely see that. I was blown away by how just big the pilot episode was. Like, you know, like I said, I only watched the first hour of the show, got a definite feel for what it was going to be like, mainly so I could talk about it with you on the show. And mm-hmm. also, I was just very impressed by how great everything looked, like, you know, flying cars. And a lot of people were saying it's a Blade Runner ripoff, but within 20 minutes, you're like, no, it's not. It's its own thing entirely. There's like, yeah, there's, mean, yeah, go ahead.
It's not, it is, there are plenty of parallels to Blade Runner. I would also say there's plenty of parallels to, like, Deus Ex. It lives in that kind of world, and you're following what is essentially like a gumshoe PI who's trying to solve a murder is kind of the main plot line that you follow. But the method of telling it and kind of the notion of this mind that's been moved from body to body lets them play with backstory, history, you know, world building a lot more than I think Blade Runner gets the chance to in the 2 hours that Blade Runner exists, because Blade Runner is really much more definitively about this one character and, like, you know, robots essentially.
Right. Right.
And this is not that. This is, it's a twist more on what is life, you know, should we be able to live forever? Like, immortality is a big point of this whole show. And then it's a lot about, like, how does your past inform your future kind of thing. So
I think it's really interesting, and it does, you know, if this sort of thing seems a little too dense for you, at its heart it is a mystery story. You know, there's a big conspiracy going on, but it does, like Matt said, kind of make you really question what mortality is and what life is. There's a really interesting scene. I'm not really going to spoil anything, but in the first episode, where an insurance company gives a little girl gets killed in a drive-by shooting, and an insurance company gives her a sleeve for her consciousness, but this sleeve is like an old, like 70-year-old, like withered old woman. But it was what her insurance paid for, so it's kind of showing like this class divide between rich and poor, and then you have, you know, these people that are constantly uploading their consciousness to new bodies, and really death isn't a thing unless your stack gets destroyed. So
correct.
So, you know, the main character is a little reckless and people abuse themselves all the time with drugs and alcohol and even with violence because they can just upload their stack and it's no big deal. So pain and fear is very different in this world. And it's cool. It's cool to kind of look at it and see what this does to society. And there's a lot of really interesting questions. Like, you know, we're not to the point yet, but I remember being at Comic-Con. I mentioned this before on the show, but someone actually made a Philip K. Dick robot at Comic-Con once.
Yeah.
And it was the scariest thing I've ever sat down and experienced because they programmed like thousands of hours of interviews with Philip K. Dick into this droid that looked like Philip K. Dick. And after he died, they were able to program a really basic rudimentary artificial intelligence for Philip K. Dick, the author, into this robot. And they had him on stage as part of this panel. And so they're having conversations with this robot author who would answer very, you know, like the answers were all just like slightly off and just weird because it's like the artificial intelligence wasn't great.
Yeah.
But we're getting to the point where we can take bits and pieces of people's memories and put them into a machine to help, like, you know, create an aspect of that person in the future. Like, I think about this. This is totally off track, but I think about this all the time with my son. Like, yes. I have a kid now, but we also have almost 300 episodes of this podcast and literally, I don't even know how many hours of audio of like you and me and Scott talking about life and games.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a gigantic 7 year plus chunk of my life with like my life and my experiences all recorded. Like, in the future, it's going to be very possible for him to like take these things as like big chunks of my memories and just have access to them, you know?
Yeah.
And who's to say that it can't be uploaded into like some sort of weird dad robot in the future?
Future dad robot.
Yeah.
So back to the show.
Sorry, man. It's I have thoughts sometimes. Crazy thoughts.
I think that the show is decent at inspiring that kind of thinking. Like it's decent sci-fi at that. I don't think it accomplishes being as heady as it wants to be as you keep going. So like as you watch more, you'll kind of get what I'm talking about. It gets kind of pulpy and a little bit not hokey, just it gets a little like pulpy, I think, is the best word for it. You know, it gets that kind of like trying to be noir but not really nailing, or maybe it goes a little cartoonish noir for a little bit, and has some difficulty finding tonally what it's trying to do somewhere in the middle third. Like it's you see it wander a little bit, you see it, and it's not bad. It's not like there's no episodes that feel like when Marvel shows on Netflix get that like middle three where you're like, what am I watching? Like why did the 3 hours of TV exist, you know? And it's just because they're hitting some kind of episode cap that they have to hit,
right?
So they have these stretch episodes. Altered Carbon doesn't really feel like it has that. It definitely moves along really well. I think it's one of those shows where you know it knows it could be heady, so it tries to be heady, and then you're like, yeah, you don't need to try. Like the concept's enough, you don't have to force, which might be in the book. To be fair, I haven't read the book. But it feels a little forced at times of like switching bodies and playing with the notion of like who is who kind of thing. So it's still very good. But it does sort of wander for a minute in the middle. I don't think, and granted this is season one, and I think the way Netflix releases shows is sort of unfair to the show, because if it's not just this like monster show like Stranger Things, for instance, which is I think one of the most like well-guided opening seasons of a show ever created. It's very concise, it knows what it's doing, it plays with the notion of being nostalgia bait but without being, you know, absolutely ridiculous most of the time. I think it's one of the best written pilots. I've read the pilot and watched it too, but I've read it, and it's one of the best written pilots, I feel like, period. It's so perfect at what it does that if a show's not like that, Netflix, it's really easy for it to get swallowed, I think, by Netflix. And I kind of hope this show doesn't, because I could see this becoming a really great, you know, Expanse or Game of Thrones style universe, because it is such a well thought out and like beautiful universe. I think it could become more, is what I'm saying.
I hope it does well. Like, it's really, Netflix doesn't really ever reveal its numbers unless they're like insane. Like,
yeah,
every once in a while they'll be like, oh yeah, Stranger Things was watched like 70 million times. You're like, oh, okay, well.
I think part of the problem, though, is that, and somebody posted this article, it might have been The Verge or Engadget or somebody, or AV Club, posted an article about how their model of pushing something every week is okay, except when you push two main title sci-fi pieces, which was they pushed Altered Carbon, and then 3 days later, Cloverfield landed. And Cloverfield just and Cloverfield, to be fair, I've only watched some of it, is not as good as Altered Carbon, like even sort of. But because it's got the Cloverfield name, and because of the way it got released, which was like an ad ran on the Super Bowl, and at the end of the ad, it was like, oh, by the way, you can watch it right now.
Yeah,
like, which is insane. It's insane to not have heard of a movie before and then have it be available the moment you hear about it. That's a crazy way to release a thing.
Especially one that's part of a franchise that's, I wouldn't say well-known, but at least known, you know.
And I would say it just, unfortunately, I think took some heat off of Altered Carbon. And because Altered Carbon came out super, like, it was just like, rough timing for a show to come out, especially one that I felt like they were trying to push as like a flagpole sci-fi show for them, or a tentpole sci-fi show. So I hope it gets its legs. I don't feel like Netflix is going to cancel it necessarily, but it's also super expensive. And if it didn't do giant numbers, then they might, you know, like up for them if they feel like it. So we'll see. I really did enjoy the first season. I thought it was good. It does have a little wandering moments here and there. It gets a little, Melissa would like come in and out of it. So like she was like, she would sit down and watch like episode 3 and then she'd be like, who's that? And then I have to go into like, and I said she could, cause I was like, go ahead and ask if you want, you know, sometimes it helps me track things when I'm remembering them. But this show in particular, I have to be like, well, that's this other guy who's now in that guy's body talking to this other guy's, you know, friend who's actually the, like, it's like a weird, like, you know, you're drawing strings from one pushpin to another kind of thing. So it is good, worth watching. I really liked it. It's, you should watch it for nothing else than it being the singly most gorgeous sci-fi show on TV right now. It's beautiful. Like it is unparalleled in how good everything looks. So
I'm excited to check out the rest of it. Like I watched the pilot super late last night and was like, oh man, I really just at this point want to stay up and watch the rest of this. But yeah, it was good, man. I was really into it.
Also, I will say there are some really great action scenes and I wish there were more of those.
Even in the pilot episode, the first big action scene is off the wall, just like insane. So
they only do in 10 episodes. I don't think there's even one of those per episode.
Oh,
like
okay.
It's kind of like once every few episodes you get this just giant.
There are actually two. Oh, can I talk really quickly? I hope this character is in the rest of the show, but the Edgar Allan Poe AI
he is in the rest of the show.
Oh, he's my awesome. God, the best. Yeah. So I guess really briefly, it's not spoiling anything. I loved this character so much from the pilot. There's, I guess, AIs that used to exist. They're not popular anymore because they're kind of crazy. But this one is kind of modeled after Edgar Allan Poe. And he owns like a brothel / I guess just a hotel that the main character visits. And just imagine like going to this hotel and Edgar Allan Poe being the innkeeper. And I guess that was something that existed in the past that was like popular 50 or 60 years ago in the narrative of this universe that has since fallen out of popularity. Like AIs aren't cool anymore. But I just thought that was such a cool little twist that all of a sudden you walk in and there's Poe sitting at the table.
You can think, if you've seen John Wick, you can think of the hotel as the same as the hotel in John Wick. It's like a sanctuary kind of place. And, so he's there. And that whole scene is fantastic too. Like his reaction of like, getting approval kind of thing.
Right.
The AI going like just hanging out and waiting and being like, all I gotta do is say yes kind of thing. Like that whole play out is fantastic.
That's
but
good,
he's in the rest of the show. He's great through the whole show. It's a show absolutely worth watching. I just hope it didn't get swallowed too much by a bad release time.
Well, good.
You know?
I'm glad you like it. I'm stoked to check out. How many episodes total? Are there 10 or 10?
10
that's
episodes,
good. That's a good number. That's a good number.
Yeah, I feel like 10's where Netflix needs to be. You know?
Awesome. Good cast too, so definitely check it out. Altered Carbon gets a plus.
I want to hear about Monster Hunter World because you and another friends that I have that don't normally play Monster Hunter are all playing this game and like loving the crap out of it.
Yeah, man, it's interesting. It really, like, I've never played the Monster Hunter games because they've always been really on the handheld systems, and I haven't really been a handheld guy in quite some time, for a variety of reasons. But the premise always was intriguing. The whole idea is just to hunt bigger and bigger monsters, and you kind of are like a sort of a man of the wilds or a woman of the wilds, and you gather resources and pelts and bones and chunks of these monsters, and you build better gear and you build better armor. Monster Hunter World is, of course, the current gen platform / PC version of this franchise. And I guess what intrigued me was I started hearing that you can kind of play this by yourself if you want to, and it's has a very MMO sort of feel to it, like not necessarily a massive open world, but an open world that you can explore at your own pace and kind of do your own thing. But it doesn't have a lot of the tropes that MMOs sort of are guilty of, you know, adopting. So, for instance, there's not a ton of like gather quests. There's not a ton of fetch quests. Like the main thing you do in this game is like look for big ass monsters, and you find them and you fight them. And each one is like a 20-minute boss fight.
Okay.
And you can do that at your own pace. You could like say, okay, I'm going to kill 3 monsters tonight, and then get all their parts, and then go in the next day and be like, now I'm going to see what I can craft. Or if you want to, you can get in with other players and join their hunt for even bigger and badder monsters and get even better stuff. So I think the thing that drew me in was I saw some footage of what the maps and such look like the environments. And honestly, it has some of the most gorgeous, especially the very first map you start out on is this sort of like lush rainforest sort of map. And it is so like the topography of the map and is the craziest I think I've seen in any of these open world games ever. Like you can swim under streams and you can kind of push vines out of the side and you can swing from ropes and climb all over the place or hitch a ride on the back of a pterodactyl and have you fly you up to the top of the treetops. And it's absolutely stunning to look at. And it's really fun to just walk around and poke around. Another thing that really drew me to the game is, when I first got in, I noticed that like each zone is basically split up like you would split up an MMO. So there's not like a massive open world that you can walk to like continuously, like an Assassin's Creed or, Mordor or what have you. It's actually split into zones and you have to fly from zone to zone. So, but the first zone you walk into, I noticed that the ecosystem is like an actual thing. Like there's dinosaurs that are just out there grazing. And if you don't mess with them, they're just going to graze and do their thing and wander around. Or if a predatory, larger monster comes up and starts feasting on a smaller monster, you can just kind of sit back at a distance and watch them, you know, fight, or you can jump in on the fight and try and take advantage of the situation and hop into the fight. So, for me, it's a relaxing experience. The gameplay is super tight. The systems are insanely confusing and unbelievably dense. I was probably 6 or 7 hours in before I even understood what the fuck I was doing. And part of that is because I haven't really played a Monster Hunter game before. Like I didn't understand what the gameplay loop was all about. I was so used to MMOs. I was like, they're not really telling me where to go and what to do. There's no giant like quest markers and beacons and stuff all over the place. And you're used to seeing all that crap in the UI that kind of is like really pushing you in a direction. And that it's not really all that visible here, which I think is kind of cool. I guess what the real draw of the game is the fact that there's 14 different weapon types, all taken from the different Monster Hunter games over the years. And each one of the weapon types is a completely different gameplay experience. So, for instance, right now I'm using like the longsword. And the longsword, you kind of play more of a samurai type character. And the thing that's really cool is like each one will give you a completely different, you know, feel, and it will make the game an entirely different game. Like the other weapon I was using for a long time was called, I want to say they have longbows, which are, you know, your typical bow and arrows, but I think it's called the gun lance, which is a huge hunking shield and then like a shotgun with a big bayonet sticking out of it. And you kind of would approach monsters and just jab at them with this bayonet and then unleash different salvos of shotgun blasts. But with a longsword, you're very nimble and you kind of roll around and do flips and jump up in the air and do all sorts of crazy acrobatics. And each one of the weapons is a completely different, they all play differently and have different combos and things of that nature. So you have to kind of find one. And that's really the first 7 hours for me where I was trying to figure out which weapon felt right for the game that I wanted to play. And you can go into a little training area and play around and figure out like, okay, like, do I want to use a machine gun or do I want to use a sword and shield or daggers or a longbow or a lance? I mean, there's a ton of different things. And then as you fight monsters, you can upgrade that weapon and get better versions of it and fight bigger and badder monsters. So it's super fun. Like, the narrative's very light. Like, you're basically part of this monster hunting force that's hunting down an ancient dragon, and you get stranded on this sort of new area of the map that none of you have ever been to before. So you're trying to kind of tame and kill the indigenous life there to kind of, you know, make room for the hunters. And along the way, you, you know, craft some gear and kill some stuff. And that's pretty much the whole narrative of the story.
That's awesome. Yeah, my friend was saying that it prevents open world fatigue because of the whole hub city thing. And you don't feel like you're just endlessly running around everywhere.
Yeah, it's very fast. You have fast travel from the very beginning of the game. Like, anytime you want to go back to the main base, like, you can say, hey, I want to fly like directly to the workshop, or I want to fly directly to my house, or I want to fly directly to the guy that sells herbs. Like, it lets you fast travel constantly. There's a billion different things to craft. I haven't even scratched the surface. So everything in the game you can like pick. So there's all sorts of different herbs and all sorts of different like rocks you can mine and mushrooms you can cultivate, and all of them can be combined to make not only different foods, but different potions and different traps that you can use. So if you wanted to be like a ranged hunter that really excelled at, you know, making the pitfall traps, you can spend some time crafting some traps and like go out with your friends and, you know, lure monsters with bait into specific areas and trap them and shoot them from a distance. The opportunities, or I guess the amount of variety that you can do here as a player is really what makes the game excel.
Yeah.
You could really, like I said before, play it any way that you want to play it. Like, the first 5 hours I was using this giant lance and I was like this like giant, you know, tank of a character that was super slow. But as I got more comfortable with just the game in general, I wanted something with a little bit more finesse. So I switched my weapons up. It doesn't really punish you for like losing or for anything. Like, you can make several attempts at killing monsters. Eventually, if you fail too many times, they'll leave the area and you'll have to kind of start over. But beyond that, it's just, you know, go out, explore, kill stuff and have fun. It's
awesome.
It's a good time. It's like, it's very relaxing, but I would say what really helped me is I watched a tutorial of not only the weapons, but kind of like 10 things you need to know about Monster Hunter.
Yeah,
I forget which site put it out, but it was really, really helpful because there's a lot of hidden stuff in the game about like how important it is to eat food and like, and you get a pet cat in the game, which I don't know if you heard about. It's called a palico.
I did.
And your palico, you can create him just like you do with character creation. You can make your cat look any way you want. You can equip him with gear, but he also is sort of your sidekick on your adventures, and he'll, you know, eat food with you and hang out with you, but also he'll bring you like herbs and he'll help gather. So basically he's like your trusty, or she is your trusty sidekick throughout the whole adventure. But, you know, how important your palico is one of the things that I learned from the tutorial videos as well. So, but yeah, man, I'm super stoked on this. I was really looking for something that was, open worldy, but I would not feel overwhelmed with just like having to gather all the feathers and do all the crap. And there's literally like none of that. It's like, it's kind of up to you. Like, you kind of set a milestone for the gear that you want to craft, and then you figure out a way to build it. So like for me, I always hated this like T-Rex that roams the first zone. And I realized that like, if I could finally kill him, I could start gathering like his teeth and his pelts, and I could build like a suit out of this T-Rex. And so I built this suit out of the T-Rex after killing like 20 of these T-Rexes. And finally I have like the whole T-Rex suit. So I'm like totally immune to fire and all this cool stuff. And my palico looks like a little mini T-Rex now, 'cause he's wearing a T-Rex pelt too, which is super cool. So now it's like, okay, well, that goal is accomplished, but now I'm going to like move on to the next zone and see like what the next big thing is that I can try and tackle. So right. It's like a self-guided, you know, MMO sort of experience. I think it would be a blast with other people. You can join random games, but like, it's, you know, kind of hit or miss depending on the people that you join up with. But I think with, like, you know, as with most of these games, with a friend, I think this would be just a fantastic experience. So
that's cool. Awesome.
It's good. Definitely check it out.
Yeah.
What's left? Oh, we have a little time. I think we have different feelings on Hero Academy 2.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but, like, I'm curious. Like,
it's not fine.
It's not fine.
We will argue until this is settled.
Yeah. So what are your initial impressions of this?
Man, I think that they brought some of the original fun of Hero Academy to the sequel would be one of my positives. And I think that, you know, all in all, it could be a decent long-term game. But to get into, Hero Academy was a game that came out a while ago from, Robot Entertainment, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And, this is the sequel, which was published by Robot Entertainment, but built feasible or had external help from a different group. Correct?
Am I making anything up yet? No, I think that's true.
All in all, it is it's similar in the fact that it is a grid-based game where you are putting down different, you know, based on which team you choose, which there's like three different kinds of teams you can pick from. One that's more like knights and people with hammers, one that's kind of druid magic, and one that's kind of more of like a straightforward mage type, or like dark elf type group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's tons of variation and tons of cards and stuff, and they moved this one. The last one wasn't card based, right? I'm not insane, correct?
No, it was not.
It's been so long since I've played it, but it was.
In your defense, it has been at least 3 or 4 years. It's been a long time.
This one is moved more towards a Hearthstone-like card-based system where you have a deck, you draw from that deck, you get, you know, randomized characters and weapons and powers that you can do, you place them on the grid, and you are trying to defend your crystals while simultaneously killing all of their crystals, destroying your combatant's crystals, is the main contention of the game. And I think my problem is that they riffed on Hearthstone pretty heavily on this one, but as we say with everyone who tries to rip off a Blizzard game, or tries to borrow from Blizzard games, I guess, like, Blizzard does stuff very, very well. And, like, with a level of polish that is, I don't even know how any studio could get close to how polished Overwatch or Hearthstone or any, you know, Warcraft games are. They're insane. They're not made by humans as far as I'm concerned. Right.
Right. Right.
So when you start coming close to those games, like, I lose out a little bit. And I think that the cost of entry here is almost the same. Like, if you want to pay for a single player campaign, you can't get to it through just playing the game. Like, I've played all of the tutorials and done multiple matches against people online. And I think I want to say I have 250 crystals, let's say. And okay, to buy the first campaign, it's 900 crystals.
Right.
And that's, I think, a $10 purchase, if I remember correctly, to get like enough crystals for that. And
the monetization is weird. Like,
It feels like they've gone hard on that monetization thing, which I know companies have to do. And I'm not trying to shit on the idea of monetizing your game. It wasn't hooky enough in the beginning for me when I was doing all the tutorials and when I've played the few matches online. Just nothing grabbed me in a way that I was like, yeah, I'm going to put $20 or $30 or $40 or $50 into this phone game. The other problem I'm having sort of is that I'm playing on my phone, and I know you're playing on your iPad and said it's a much better experience, but it's kind of not, it's 2018 and phones exist. If you're going to put out on multiple platforms, then like
you gotta change the UI.
You got to change the UI, and they didn't. It's clearly the same UI that's on the iPad. It's tiny. It's really hard to use at certain times. There are certain gestures that, like, it's hard for me to read cards before I put them down. Sometimes when I'm dropping them on the grid, it looks like I'm dropping them in one place and they'll go in another. And I have to literally just quit at that point and restart because it's like,
right.
It's such a tactical game.
I can see how
that'd
be frustrating. Yeah. Yeah.
So it just, that nothing really grabbed me in it. Nothing was super and crazy engaging. And then that moment of how much do I have to pay to actually enjoy this game? And the reality is, like, I'm going to guess a campaign probably takes like a few hours, right? If you were to play through the whole thing, if you were to like,
If you're
not hours
good,
straight,
yeah.
But I mean, you know, like let's say it's an 8-hour campaign per group
right.
that you buy a campaign for.
Right.
It's just a big buy-in for me to do. And then I think it's also an internet required, so I can't do it when I'm on the train and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just there was like a lot of things stacked in the negative column for me that just didn't land. And then to be dead honest, when I started, I was like, well, maybe I'm cutting it shortchanged. I should do the online duels since that was the crux of Hero Academy. Hero Academy 1 was a fully online asynchronous game against your friends, right?
Right.
And I think, you know, while there were complaints about the mechanics of that game at times, that's what made that game so much fun was that it was async. It was like playing Words with Friends, but you were doing like a SRPG or something. You know what I mean? Like you were facing off against your friends doing this strategy game, but asynchronously. So you didn't have to be online at the same time. I could make a move and wait for you to make a move back or whatever.
Right.
And then this one is literally Hearthstone, where you are playing real time with whoever you're playing against. But what ended up happening was that guy had literally a better deck than me, like for sure. He was playing with a better deck than I had.
Yeah.
And all I had to do was sit back by my crystals and wait and do the old same mechanic that we all thought was busted in the first one, which is like, well, I just won't move. And if you don't move, he has to come to me. And by the time he gets to me, I've built up everything and can just start fighting. And I almost beat him. And he had clearly put money into his deck where I had put
right,
zero
right.
things into my deck. Like I didn't even custom build it. I think I was playing with whatever the open box thing gave me. And it's just that kind of stuff. I was just like, it was just kind of a bummer because I remembered enjoying Hero Academy 1 so much that this felt like a change to chase current game mechanics, not a change to improve the original game, which is what was a bummer to me, I guess. So
I do have some stuff. I totally see what you're getting at. And I think there's a lot of validity to it. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. But so in terms of the turtling and stuff, that was a huge problem in the first game. And you're right. It was something that you could do to kind of not only be a dick, but, you know, win a lot of matches that way.
Yeah. I mean,
they added a mechanic now when overtime happens. And if your opponent's turtling, they give you these bombs essentially that not only refill your mana, but also heavily damage opponent's crystals. So if they're hunkered down for too long, you can build up these bombs and you can just blow up their crystals and end the match. So that's one thing they did. I spent $20 on this game. And I ended up being able to buy with that $20, I want to say, all three of the main campaigns.
I was trying to do the math and it's just that weird monetization math of like, not real dollars that you're
because it gives
buying?
You a certain number of crystals, a certain number of packs. It was basically like a, you know, I think it was a welcome pack that I bought for $20 and I was like, well, I love the first game enough. I don't mind microtransactions and stuff. So I spent the $20. I played through the Dark Elf campaign, and as you play through the campaigns, it's a lot like the Hearthstone campaigns where it'll give you cards as you progress. So every I think there's 12 stages in each campaign, and every I think 3 or 4 stages you'll get a couple cards, and one of them might be a legendary. So as you're going through this, you're getting better and better cards. I actually haven't really played online against other players all that much because I've only been doing the campaigns. I finished the Dark Elf campaign and actually really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the deck building process for me personally. That's always been my favorite part of any of these collectible card game type deals. From Magic through, you know, Hearthstone and all that stuff, I've loved building my deck probably the most. So what would happen during the campaign is I would hit an opponent or a match that was just way too hard for the deck that I was using to the point where it was almost unfair. Like the match was almost unfair. You're facing off against an opponent that has like, you know, a giant longbow and summons a bunch of spiders and all my guys like, you know, weren't immune to poison and stuff like that. What I would discover is that I had to go in and actually tweak out my decks to beat these certain levels. And I really enjoyed that process of doing the math and figuring out what was not only fun, but what worked really well. So I was unlocking better cards, and now I'm doing the Alliance campaign, which I think was 900 gems. And I'm like on the 12th level of that, but there was a map in there that I even sent a message to the Hero Academy Twitter account. Cause I was like, I cannot beat this. I had probably tried it 100 times. It was just like unfairly difficult and like, so challenging, and I ended up having to cheese it so bad. The short version is there's this boss that has like a billion hit points, and he summons just like an army of like ghosts and stuff to come and attack you. And I ended up having to like poison him and wait for his health bar to tick down over 20 rounds for him to actually beat him. So I had to turtle and like build up a defense around my crystals, hold out for as long as I can, and let poison slowly tick away at him, because I could never get close enough to hit him with a sword or anything like that. So it was just super, super challenging. But I like the game quite a bit. I think that you're right. There's some major balance problems. I think that if you were to spend, like I did, spend $20 and have access to these legendary cards, then you are at an advantage over the people that did not. And there is a competitive season going on right now, you know, in the game. So like you can actually play competitively against other players. And when the season's over in a few weeks, you get, you know, cards based on how well you did. It's tricky though, because Hearthstone's the same way. Like you can spend however much money you want on the game, and right. And that's that. So, I think the major qualm that you had in terms of the UI and stuff is definitely a problem. I've probably played this game for maybe 15, 20 hours since it came out, because I play it like every night before I go to bed. And there are still menus that I don't get. And I'm not an idiot. Yeah. Like I go into a menu, yeah. I'm like, where's my deck building again? Like everything is just a little weird, a little off with the UI.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine using the UI on a phone, because even on my iPad Air, some of the icons are so tiny and some of the units are so tiny that it's just very, you know, very hard to deal with.
And to be fair, I'm on an iPhone X too, which is like the biggest phone screen you can get. You know what I mean? Like it's, and it's still just, it's just weird. I know it's probably small team itis kind of thing where they probably built it in Unity. They probably, you know, didn't have five teams that could perfect it for each platform. I get that. Like I understand the issues around it. It's just sort of like, well, then don't put out a phone version. Like put it on Steam, put it on an iPad, and like move on with life, because that's clearly what you were aiming at originally, you know?
Right. Yeah. But I would definitely say though, if you are into sort of tactical fantasy stuff and you like the idea of deck building, i.e. like, you know, a game similar to Hearthstone, I'd say definitely check it out. There's a lot here. There's hundreds and hundreds of different cards, all of which are visually represented, with different graphics. So like different units, all look differently. If you equip them with different weapons, the weapons actually show up in the character's hands, which I thought was really, really cool. There's lots of different ways to buff your characters and different combos you can pull off. So there's a lot going on. And I think people would like it. If you like Hearthstone, I think you'll like it. But I also think that, you know, the problems that Matt discussed are real. But the game also just came out. Games like this sometimes take a very long time to figure out and to balance. So,
yeah, and it's just that thing of like, it's just these are the two different perspectives. And I don't think anything you said is necessarily wrong either. You know, like that's where this kind of game falls for me. It's not one of those games where I look at it, I'm like, oh, what a trash game. Like I don't even want, you know, like it's not that necessarily. It just didn't hit where it needed to hit for me, and it missed some stuff. And I just ultimately for me it was like, It lost what I liked about the original Hero Academy. And that was, I think that was where it kind of.
Well, yeah, it was super fun. When the first Hero Academy came out, I remember all of us liked it so much. There was a PAX where that was like literally the first place that Yumi and Scott ran to, because we're like, oh man, we want to see what's coming up next for Hero Academy. Cause we were playing it so heavily, that, you know, everybody, our wives were playing it. Like all of our friends were playing it. We had a queue of like 20 matches a night that we'd have to, you know, do our moves before bed. So it was cool, but it also, you know, how do you monetize that? Like what they were doing back then is they were selling whole
heroes, I think, right?
Yeah, the whole classes, like the whole classes, dwarves. Yeah. Like you want dwarves, it's $3. But then once you buy dwarves, that's it. Like you spent your $3. So that's, you know, now it's
Well, because that's a balancing act too, you know, like you can't release single things, because if 10 people buy it and 10 don't, the 10 that don't will get screwed. Like it's like there's a lot of balancing. I understand. Like this stuff. So it's you know, I don't know. It's an interesting attempt. Like I'm fine with letting it. I didn't delete it from my phone, but I'll be honest, I haven't opened it in like a week either. So it's one of those like I'm going to let it sit, and if things keep kind of shifting and changing and they progress and they get to put time into the mobile version a little bit more, maybe, you know, then it'll be worth rechecking out, and maybe we'll talk about it again at that point.
Cool.
So
well, let's do that.
Hi, this is Amy Acker, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
All right.
So.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Welcome back. That was a long break, man.
So long.
Our question of the week was about describing your favorite game with a single word and having us guess what it is. I have a terrible feeling we're going to be very bad at this, but I think we're going to try anyway.
What I also like about this is that we have no way of knowing whether we are right or wrong.
Yeah, and that's the fun part. Hopefully they'll tell us on social media later. And hopefully our listeners listening will be like, you idiots, it's totally this. So we'll see if we can muddle our way through this one. This was very late when I thought of this.
That's fine.
Of those deals. The first one, first answer is from Josh Silverman, who's Bear Punch, who does the Concal podcast. Hey, buddy. He says, noir. This could be a variety of different things.
So many things. I'm going to go Max Payne.
Okay. I'm going to go L.A. Noir.
Yeah, I mean, that was my obvious guess, but I'm going to roll with Max Payne. I'm going to see if it's Max Payne.
Awesome.
One of the Max Paynes.
Awesome.
I don't feel like I have to narrow down.
One of those Max Paynes.
One of them Max Paynes.
You can take the next one.
Alexi at Mighty Axe says, whoa, wow, whoa.
I don't know what this is, man. I looked at this one and I feel terrible because I have no idea.
I'm going to go with... I know this is wrong because I know what we've talked to him about before, I believe, over Twitter, but I'm going to go with like D-Rezzed or one of those, like off the rails racing. Like, what was the Falcons racing game on Nintendo?
Oh, I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about though, right? Scott was like a fucking whiz at it, of course.
You
know what I'm talking about. One of those like high speed, no wheels racing games where you're flying around platforms and there's just lights and techno music blaring in your face. Yeah.
This is going to be like Shaq Fu or something. Like I have no idea what this is.
The original Batman on the Nintendo.
Yeah. I'm going to feel like an idiot when he tells us what this actually is. But if you're listening, let us know on social media what Whoa Wow Whoa is from. Next one is from Platinum Fist, Carlo. He says, war. Oh, that could be so many different things. I think it's the war never changes Fallout line, because that's the very famous line from, I believe, Fallout, unless I'm totally brain farting.
No, is it Halo or is it Fallout?
It could be Halo, could be Fallout, could be Gears of War.
Could be. Any one of those three, but you have to make a choice. What are you going to make a choice with?
I'm going for Fallout.
I'm going to go Gears.
Gears? Okay.
Yeah.
Let us know what the answer is.
This is up there with let us figure out what your emojis are.
Yeah, I like this.
Abigail Tyson at Abigail K. Tyson says midnight with an exclamation point.
I don't know what that is. Do you know what that is?
Midnight. I'm going to say Midnight Club.
Midnight Club? Let's go for Midnight Club as our answer, as our final answer. No, good news about her. She was working with Baptiste at Adult Swim Games and just moved on over to Bethesda. So I think she's actually going to be working with Hillary, which is just a weird world that we live in.
Yeah, small world.
Chris Setz, Jedi Saber, says Legend.
I mean, it's got to be Zelda,
It's
got
to
right?
be Zelda. I mean, yeah. It's got to be. That or Leisure Suit Larry. Which is a classic.
Justin Banks at Sir Kingsman says Kindly.
Oh, I know what this is. This is BioShock.
The
Would You Kindly line, yeah.
Yeah.
BioShock. That's a good one, man. Thank you. I almost did not get that one right. Good stuff. Sam Nee Eating Green Egg says Unparalleled. I feel like I should know what this is.
My gut says it's Mass Effect for her, but
I think your gut's probably correct.
Yeah.
I think that's a good guess.
That would be my wild guess would be Mass Effect.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But who knows?
Yeah.
No one except Sam.
Except for Sam. She'll let us know. In theory.
The last one is Witch of the Wilds at Wild Morrigan, and the clue is Blight.
That one's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Gonna be some Dragon
it's
Age.
It's definitely Halo. Oh, right.
For sure, some Halo. Absolutely. Cool. Well, that was a terrible segment. Sorry, Internet. That was much better in my head when I was thinking of it last night. I'm like, this will be funny, but these are actually really hard. But thank you guys for wanting to participate. and thank you guys for tuning into episode 298 of the Rated NA podcast. You of course can find us on Twitter, and it's at NerdAppropriate. Facebook/NerdAppropriate, Instagram as well, also NerdAppropriate. We're going to be, Matt and I, at least, we're going to be at PAX East in a couple months. So the first week of April, we'll be there. So definitely reach out and let us know if you also
are. I like
PAX
East because I can get on a train and be there.
Yeah, it's a quick little jaunt for you, which is pretty cool, which is very cool. So we will be heading there. And definitely say hi to us if you're going to be there as well. And we'll be back a couple more episodes to episode 300, which is crazy.
Crazy.
An orange.
I got a tiny bit of coffee.
I'm gonna do that after we're done.
You want me to let you eat your orange?
There's one little slice.
Is it a cutie?
It is.
Cuties are great, man. Ain't nothing wrong with those.
Pretty much survive off of what he doesn't eat.
Yeah. That's fine. That's what the dad does. Barely makes it so he can resent his son and punish him later in life.
True.